You're listening to The Cube Show on demand. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's The Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I?
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
You know what time it is. Oh, yeah, you know what time it is. It's time for the Phone Restore Call of the Day, presented by our good friends at Phone Restore. You can drop your phone off at their location, which is at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue, or visit phonerestore.com. That's if you've dropped your phone or iPad and you have that spider web across the screen. Man, hate that. Or if your computer's not quite working right, you can bring it to the guys there, too. Again, it's 900 Bob Wallace Avenue, their website, phonerestore.com. Mr. Kublick, the Yankees were winners, and I told you that John Sterling wouldn't leave us hanging with D.D. Gregorius. Two-run home run in the fourth.
1-1. Swung on and hit in the air to deep right. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Second deck. Yes, indeedy. Didi Gregorius makes Yankee fans euphoric.
Yes, he did. Thank you, John Sterling, for making all of us happy. Now, I got pressured last night into doing a different call of the day. So I'm going to bow to that pressure for just half a second.
Yard broke, right wing circle, feature backdoor. Sissons scores! Colton Sissons from the bottom of the left wing circle, and the Predators have the lead again, 4-3.
Now it's Colton Sissons with a goal against the Ottawa. It's because they're clearly in the wrong conference. Anaheim, getting the win. They win 4-2 in the series, and it's surprising the Nashville won because it looked like early on they were going to be cursed because they were wished good luck yesterday by someone you may not want to be wished good luck against. Cole, let's say you were in the state of Tennessee. Let's just play this out, okay? You're in the state of Tennessee, and you're a Nashville Predators fan. Just pretend. Who is the one person within the state of Tennessee that you do not want wishing your team good luck?
Clay Travis?
Excited to be here in Smashville. Wanted to wish the Preds best of luck in Game 6. Stand with us and go Vols.
Butch Jones saying good luck to the Smashville Predators. This went out on the Nashville Sports Twitter feed. It said, hey, at Preds NHL, we have a special message from today's guest speaker at UT, Coach Jones, about tonight's game.
Excited to be here in Smashville. Wanted to wish the Preds best of luck in Game 6. Stand with us and go Vols.
The best part about this is obviously all the responses. Because this is what makes sports fans so great. All these Tennessee fans, and by Tennessee I mean Smashville at this point because Tennessee's not doing anything. All these Smashville fans, let's take a look at some of the comments to Butch Jones is saying, just merely saying good luck to the Nashville Predators. First up is a meme that said, don't you put that evil on me. Another meme that says, no, 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 no. another tweet said, should have asked Derek Mason instead. Another one says, great, we are jinxed now.
It does feel like Derek Mason would be the more realistic option.
Well, he's in Nashville, so it does kind of make some sense.
Like two blocks away.
Another one says, great, we are jinxed now. Stay off the Preds bandwagon. Another is a meme that says, go away. Another one says, delete this immediately. Another one says, I got this, coach, and I hate you, Butch Jones. You can end now. Just a weird thing to say. Delete this. Why did you put this stink on the press? Now he has cursed the Preds. Do not bring this joker to the Preds game. Oh no, hashtag cursed.
Wow.
Don't worry, even if they lose, they are still champions of life. Oh God, I'm glad he didn't say anything about the Preds being champions of life. Why did you do this? Sorry, bro. Coach Mason already been standing with us. Ride out, Butch. All these Candy fans be hating. We're all Tennessee, so get behind the Preds. Except Coach Jones. This is so mean. He needs to get out of my city.
Come on.
No!
It's a state school.
Nice. Now here comes the bad karma. Rise above this, Preds.
Wow. Come on, guys.
LOL Oscar. It just keeps going.
Rise above this.
It doesn't stop. All Preds fans right now, a meme says, we are screwed.
What is the what's the Preds like fight slogan? Battle cry. They had to come up with something catchy.
Like
rise up.
Man, I know this. Pred up.
Pred to death.
Predneg Nation. That's different. Pred up. Predator.
Somebody's got to know this.
Chop on. That's the Braves. Somebody does know this. I've seen this before, when I see it. I think it's probably mentioned in.
Yeah, he says it in the thing. Stand with us.
That's what he's. That's stupid. I don't like that.
Well, their official account is hashtag Stand with Us on everything.
Please take this down. Make it stop. Butch is 100%.
Take this down.
Butch is 100% to blame if the Predators lose.
Yes, because it works that way.
Butch supports the Grizzlies, and we saw where that went.
Oh boy.
He couldn't even say go Preds. I hope they don't let him anywhere near the team. Thanks, coach, but the Preds are aspiring to be more than champions of life. Worry about beating Vanderbilt. A couple of F words. Oh, this is just so mean. We are screwed. Aw, S word. Oh, we're cursed. It just keeps going, Cole.
Not good. Just
keeps going. Butch Jones, even when he's just trying to be nice and say...
Excited to be here in Smashville. Wanted to wish the Preds best of luck in Game 6. Stand with us and go Vols.
I had to sneak the go Vols in at the very end. He just tried to be nice. He was asked, wish the luck to the Predators, and he got roasted on Twitter. Roasted! Luckily, they've won, so there was no curse.
Yeah, we've got, by the way, we want you to continue the follow-up here with gas station food, if any of it's acceptable, because when we get to 10 after tweets in 2 minutes, it's, apparently people are tweeting in that some of it is. Some folks are okay with it and enjoy it. They're giving us their go-to.
We're not talking about buying little snacks that are prepackaged in there.
This has to be food prepared inside of a gas station,
right.
A fueling stop.
Like chicken fingers and hot dogs and nachos and... Get my stomach's kind of churning like in a bad way now thinking about all this. I've had chicken tenders once from a gas. Well, you say tenders or fingers?
I say chicken fingers. I don't say tenders.
I used to say chicken fingers, but I trained myself to say tenders because it's only tenders everywhere.
Was
I read
it like
it.
Less redneck?
I guess. Listen, I'm a city boy. All right, I'm a city boy in the city of Madison. You from the country of Homewood?
Pass them chicken tenders.
Yeah, it's not very southern. But
did you make extra chicken fingers?
I had them once from a gas station, and my wife came in and she caught me. Not that I was trying to hide.
Wow!
But she
caught
she,
you.
She saw that it was from a gas station, and she's like, "I need you to never do that again." Mm.
But there's an alternate reason why you should never get chicken from a gas station. There's also a reason why you should never even enter a gas station that prepares chicken tenders, fingers, breasts, whatever. You ain't getting that smell off of you for at least 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is nothing on planet Earth like that. It is the equivalent of going into a local pub in a city that only has one watering hole in 1995 when you could smoke in that establishment. You're not getting it off for days.
You can smoke inside.
Kids are born today's politics. You walk inside of a gas station, a fueling stop that makes, creates, cooks, and serves fried chicken, tenders, fingers, breasts, wings, whatever. Mm-hmm. That stench is not leaving your body, much less your clothing, for about a week.
I will say this about the smell.
I've gotten back into my vehicle after waiting in line to purchase just maybe a beverage at one of those joints. Gotten back into my car and not been able to breathe. It hit me that hard because it was already on my clothes and it wasn't leaving. There's legitimately toxic chemicals in whatever they're cooking that chicken in. Because it won't leave your articles of clothing, not even after one wash. It takes some sort of detoxification of clothing to get that stench off.
It really sounds like you're starting to shade the argument here for not doing it. Let me say this, though.
I'm leaning that direction.
About the smell, when it's about 10:45 in the morning, it gets about 11, if I'm leaving the studio early, if it's a weekend.
Just don't do it before you come in here, because then I won't be able to breathe for 4 hours.
Well, they don't serve chicken tenders at 4:30 in the morning when I'm driving here.
Oh, I bet some places do.
Well, not this place. Not the gas stations that are around me. I walk in, and the smell is actually really nice. Like, I smell cooking. Maybe it's just me, and I'm being a fat guy, and I love the smell of food cooking, but,
probably.
It is. It's tempting not to go ahead and just go over there and buy it anyway. Now, I'll tell you this. I will never buy one of those hot dogs that are rolling around. I will never do that. The little rotissimat thing going. I will never do that.
So we also need to know
chicken tenders.
What is the most embarrassing piece of food you've purchased that was cooked in a gas station? Before we get to 10 After Tweets, I want to tell you about our friends at Diamond Golf Cars. Head over to diamondgolfcars.com. I was in the store over in Huntsville yesterday. Give them a call, 256-270-8160. Listen, they can customize any golf cart any way you want. Wheels, lift kits, stereo systems, lights, back seats, whatever you need for you and your family to enjoy summer, getting to the pool, getting around the neighborhood. Diamond Golf Cars has everything. Bad Boy Off-Road, buggies are there. The Easy Go, Yamahas, Yeti coolers, kicker sound systems. DiamondGolfCars.com or call 256-270-8160. Let's get the 10 After Tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
Footballman, at TG Footballman, tweets at Cole Kubrick. Those big old potato wedges at gas station are legit.
I've never had potato wedges at a gas station. Now, are we going to find out some weird things people have had at a gas station?
Here it comes.
I've never had potato wedges. I've never seen potato wedges at a gas station.
At Bama Muscle 63 tweets, dude, the Mojo Burger from Texaco, awesome! I'm a former health inspector, by the way. Hashtag delish. That guy's got to have some stories of inspecting the potential health or unhealth of gas station cooking spaces.
Oh, I'm sure he's seen a cockroach or two or three. Again, I didn't know that.
Trophy Nuts tweets, I've had some great biscuits from a gas station.
Now, I've heard the tamest of food comes from the breakfast side. Like, the easiest to transition for yummy without giving you botulism.
Frank Smith tweets, Mapco has a deli, makes great sandwiches. Sandwiches is definitely pulling it down a notch. Can be semi-healthy, much more normal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different.
It's not up for debate what it's actually cooked in.
It's a little different than, like, frying some food and putting it out there for me to enjoy.
Like, if you get chicken at a gas station, what's the realistic possibility of how often they're changing that grease out? Every 2 weeks?
Well, listen. I think some of this is, like, old school thinking. Like, it's hard to... I mean, they would get shut down.
No. See, you don't know how the world works.
We have a former health inspector who's listening to the show right now.
Let me take you back to one of our favorite Wu-Tang Clan songs, one you've performed for Archie Reed's rap, by the title Cash Rules Everything Around Me, Cream Get the Money, Dollar Dollar Bills, y'all. Now, I'm not accusing one Bama Muscle 6'3 of taking $100 handshakes as a health inspector, but you're telling me they're not out there? You tell me that the Dodge's chicken folks can't Hold slide on. A honey to somebody Hold every on. Now and then?
Are you now accusing health inspectors of taking bribes from gas stations? Let me tell you a bad
story. I'm not accusing you. I'm telling you it happens. 100%.
Let me tell you
keeping it 100.
A bad story that happened, not to me, but to someone. You know, my Mrs. Arkey, she has a coworker, someone who works under her. Not in that way. And she's a subordinate. He's a subordinate. He had chicken from the same gas station that I had it from, and there were metal bristles from the cleaning brush in the chicken. And
you're defending
and
this
he
place,
ate
though.
It. I'm not defending. I'm saying I had the chicken there once. There were metal bristles in the chicken, tore up his esophagus, had to go to the emergency room. I know there are horror stories.
By the way, we have a winner for best food at a gas station. I'm going to get to it shortly. Anthony Oliver tweets, there's a place in Memphis that has been using the same grease for like 90 years. How are people not dying from that? Red Lightning tweet, apparently Arky has never been in a store on Bob Wallace or Drake at 7 a.m. Chicken fingers and gizzards.
At 7 a.m.?
Gizzards. Sipping on some gizzards.
You wouldn't sip on them.
Well, that's the way he spelled it.
You wouldn't want to.
He spelled it like scissorp.
You can add Z's to anything.
Chomping on some gizzards.
That's what Snoop Dogg made a living on in like 2002.
William Wise tweets, there are a few gas stations in hashtag Huntsville that are better than some fast food chains. No, it's not saying much. C Strong Bloodline tweets in, Papa Jack's on Bob Wallace has the greatest chicken tenders and corn dogs in the history of life. All facts, emoticon,
wow.
Honey!
Wow.
Corn dogs is not the worst place we're going to go here. But I appreciate the honesty.
Keep them coming, people. What are you eating at a gas station?
Chris Crow tweets, at Cube Show, at CLC Crow 1876. That's CROWE. If you don't believe me, go look at his timeline. 1 minute ago. We'll retweet this from Cube Show. At Cube Show. I can barely read this. Tater Logs at Shell Station on Highway 43 are awesome. I just said that. Tater Logs.
Wow. That's legit. A tater log. I'm going to give a pretty good idea what that is. Keep them coming, because I feel like there's more out there that I don't know about.
Ross Twing says, when the gas station hands a $100 bill to the health inspector, does he then say hashtag stand with us?
Stand with us.
Nice job, Butch. Got everybody hating you. Bill, all you want to do is stand with us.
Stand with us and go Vols.
Bill Connolly of SB Nation discusses his run for college football commissioner next on Cube Show.
Excited to be here in Smashville. Wanted to wish the Preds best of luck in Game 6. Stand with us and go Vols.
You're not going to let that one go today, are you?
People hate Butch Jones. Oh, they hate him.
The cold question of the day, presented by Dreamland Barbecue, go to dreamlandbbq.com, is up now. Pinned atop at Cube Show. Have you ever eaten food prepared in a gas station? Early leader in the clubhouse is 75% say yes. Bill Connolly joins us now of SBNation.com, covers college football. Very intriguing, I guess, series of stories, really, kind of all falling off of one gigantic story about Bill Connolly running for college football commissioner. Bill, good morning. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'll start with you. Have you ever eaten food prepared in a gas station?
Oh, absolutely. I live in Missouri. We have Quick Trips here. Quick Trips, fantastic.
Okay. It sounds more official than like the fried chicken joints we have stuffed into gas stations here. So
right. I mean, I also grew up in Oklahoma, so I've had the gas station gizzards experience as well. So I think I think we've run the gamut at one point or another.
So a very extensive write up by you, and this is an excellent job the way that you did this and broke this down. I'm going to start first and foremost. The story is kind of your vision for college football. Why a commissioner? Why does college football need a commissioner in your opinion?
Well, I just think, you know, the way things are set up, it's really, really easy for the power to stay exactly where it is. And the biggest thing, the biggest problem I have with college football on occasion is just the complete and total lack of fairness. It's always going to be run by an oligarchy. It's always going to have kind of a ruling class, so to speak. But we start to lose the forest for the trees, I guess you could say, when you think about, you know, we're talking about the power conferences kind of pulling further away from the rest of college football. Well, if we're worried about college football's future, if we're worried about the opportunities in the sport, then basically having them distance themselves could end up limiting the number of college football opportunities kids have. And if they don't have the opportunity, and it's a dangerous sport, which it always will be to some degree, then they're going to look for other opportunities.
Bill Connolly joining us. His article on him running for commissioner of college football is up at SBNation.com now. I like how you sort of segment the different things of college football that you would like to take on. First and foremost, the student athlete Bill of Rights. What sort of rights would you have at the top of the list that you would like to provide for college football players?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are certain things that the Northwestern students were asking for a few years ago that, you know, when the word union got involved, everybody started yelling about, you know, it became like a political talking points thing. But the bottom line is a lot of the things they were trying to pursue were, you know, guaranteed scholarships and the right to graduate scholarships if you've got them, better health care options for the injuries you receive while in college, you know, things of that nature. I don't see why, especially if the finances are available for such a thing. I don't know why we wouldn't go down that road, but it's kind of hard. And again, once the word union gets involved, then it becomes everybody just starts yelling talking points and we don't get anywhere.
Bill Connolly with us of SBNation.com. You want to modernize amateurism. Is this how important would this be if you're named college football commissioner tomorrow for you?
Well, I mean, I think it's something that would take a lot of, from a logistical standpoint, it would take a lot of time to figure out, you know, what is feasible now, what's feasible long term, et cetera. But the Olympic model basically says that you can make money off your likeness. That's the super short version of it. And you think about, a lot of this is another political thing, I guess. A lot of people will tell you, you know, there's so much money in college football, the players need to be paid. Well, I mean, that's if that's doable, sure, but that is a very tricky thing from a logistical standpoint. So what if we just let others pay them in terms of endorsement deals and some of the things you see on the Olympic side? There are certainly things that have to be figured out in that regard. It's not just flipping a switch, but why don't we go down that road? It would solve a lot of problems.
I'm with you on just handing kids salary is not the way to go. But that would lead into one of the other topics that you bring up in bringing back the video game, NCAA football would return. That's a big plus for a lot of fans.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, we put out 9 talking points in a lot of different ways, and bringing back the video game was, I don't know, 75% of the positive feedback yesterday when we put this up. If the kids are making money off their likeness and we're, you know, EA is ready to figure out exactly how to, you know, how to do that. Like, does each kid need to sign something giving away their rights? Is it, you know, how does that work? If we can figure that out, then I think teams would almost certainly sign off on, the rights and the licensing from that angle, and we get our game back. Everybody loved that game, but it became an infeasible thing, and I think EA would absolutely bring it back. I know they would bring it back if you can clear some of these hurdles.
Bill Connolly joining us, writes for college football for SB Nation at SBN_BillC. The article is about Bill if you love college football, to save it, he's going to run for college football commissioner, but basically just talking about if there was a commissioner, what would you do? Now you get to more on-the-field type topics, expanding the playoff, the games are too long, and you want to fix scheduling, and that includes scrapping divisions. Let's start there with scrapping divisions in college football. Why do you think that that would offer a big plus for the game?
Well, first things first, what do we complain about frequently in college football? You know, the SEC West is a lot stronger than the East. The Big Ten East is a lot stronger than the West. The Pac-12 North is a lot stronger than the South most of the time. So, you know, one of the ways to fix that is, you know, we can try to even out those divisions, but just the power structure itself is going to change over time. The Big 12 North used to be stronger than the South when the Big 12 was first formed. The East used to be stronger than the West and the SEC. So, you know, the whole idea of divisions is kind of outdated when you think about the fact that most teams can take care of most of their annual rivalries within about three steps. Most teams, now Tennessee and LSU, there are some that would probably claim more than three. But the bottom line is for the SEC, if you're playing three permanent rivals and you're rotating the other five games, you know, five teams 1 year, five teams the next, you've played everybody in your conference within 2 years. You've played at every home stadium within four. There's potential for some awkward ties at the top. You know, that's the biggest issue against doing it. But it seems to me, I mean, that's solving three problems and causing one more. That's still a net gain.
And you also discuss, I'm intrigued to hear about expanding the playoff, why you think that is maybe necessary and, I guess, more importantly, possible.
Yeah, I mean, I fear bracket creep. We think about, you know, a 20 or 24 team playoff or whatever. At some point, it makes me a little bit queasy. But the thought of being able to expand to eight or even six necessarily, but probably eight, and get a group of five representative in there, so that if you're part of FBS, you actually have a shot at the national title. Clearly for half of FBS, that is not the case currently. That sounds like the most fair possible solution. But to get to eight teams, you know, as Ben Boulware pointed out, you know, the Clemson linebacker, you know, the health risks involved currently, you know, until we get to a point where we're doing better from a long-term health care standpoint of the students, until we know that they're getting a better opportunity to make money off their likeness, we can't really justify having them play another game. We do that, and we can justify having them play another game, and everybody in FBS has a shot at the title.
This sounds crazy, Bill. Bill Connolly of SBNation.com with us. But games, some people I think would really be on board with finding ways for them to not be as long. Now, a part of that is the overtime system, which at certain points in time lends itself to games going an extremely extra distance. But what would you do to maybe shorten the times of college football games?
Well, I mean, there's certainly, I understand that there's a money aspect and an ad revenue aspect, especially when, you know, with football changing or with TV changing and with, you know, live sports being about the only guaranteed revenue maker. If you can experiment a little bit on certain broadcasts, at least with fewer commercial breaks or shorter commercial breaks, have more at halftime. There's been talk of maybe cutting halftime by a couple of minutes. But the biggest thing for me, I think, is just, you know, why do we stop? I understand the premise of stopping the clock for a first down or an incompletion or whatnot, but really that only comes into play, that becomes an important thing, the last 5 minutes or so of a half. Why do we do it in the first quarter and the third quarter? That alone would save a few minutes of time. And we're not talking about, it's not like football games are an hour longer than they used to be, but 10 minutes can make a humongous difference. And it seems like, you know, that piece alone would save 3 to 5 minutes per game at least.
What would be at the top of your list of all the things we've talked about? If we name you college football commissioner tomorrow, you can only make one change for 2017. What's it going to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if it were possible to set up the Bill of Rights thing, I think that's, you know, that's not the most exciting piece of all of this. There's a lot more, you know, a lot of the other ideas get the creative juices flowing a little bit more. But I think, you know, being able to kind of establish a student-athlete Bill of Rights, certain schools have already begun doing that. If you can get that knocked out, in your first few months on the job, you've done a heck of a job, I think. So we'll start there.
Do you think college football needs to do that to avoid, do you think they need to do it more for the better of the game or to avoid further litigation in the future?
Well, I think both. I mean, I think those are kind of hand in hand. But the bottom line is, you know, we still kind of view amateurism as something defined in the mid-50s to avoid, you know, workers' comp issues. You know, that's how the whole idea of a student-athlete came about. It was a kind of a cynical thing from the start, and 60 years later we still do it. You know, that just isn't – clearly it's sustainable, I guess. They've been doing it for 60 years, but it's not right, and it's not necessarily fair to the athlete. And there are so many options beyond us simply arguing about, you know, pay the players and whatnot. The whole premise of this piece was really to just push the conversation forward a little bit and stop having the same arguments over and over again. And, I, you know, from the first 24 hours of it being up, I think we did a pretty good job.
So if Bill Connelly is not the next commissioner of college football, I guess the first, but that position is created, and let's say you remove your name, who are some candidates that you would like to see serve as college football commissioner?
Yeah, the whole idea of this whole let's have me do it kind of thing was, it came from the fact that anytime you see a piece about commissioner, even if they do a good job of laying out why a commissioner is needed, they turn around and say, you know, a candidate for this would be, you know, athletic director X or coach Y. You know, basically somebody who, you know, I guess Bud Selig probably did a lot of pretty good things for baseball, but he was known as being kind of a, well, or Roger Goodell, I guess, you know, just being kind of the face of the owners. That doesn't really solve anything. That wouldn't really address the need. So anybody who has less, who is less from the inside. That was the whole idea of let's just do it ourselves. But, you know, anybody who is not a coach, is not an athletic director, has outside thoughts, is not influenced necessarily by simply the experience of being an athletic director, I think that's where it needs to go. I think that's the most important thing.
You feel like the, if there were a college football commissioner, I guess to summarize it easily, does not need to be a member of the good old boy network of college football,
correct,
so to speak.
Correct. I've met Oliver Luck. I like Oliver Luck, but that's the first name that comes up, and I don't see that he would do anything like big that would actually maybe address some of these issues.
Bill, great stuff, man. The article is up at SBNation.com. We'll tweet it out from the Cube Show account. It's really good stuff, very intriguing, thought-provoking, and appreciate you joining the show to discuss it.
Thank you.
Bill Connelly with SBNation.com covers college football there. So, college football commissioner, good for the sport, in your opinion?
I mean, if they get any power, yes. It's just there are so many tentacles of power in college football. There's athletic directors, presidents, and the universities themselves, the conferences themselves, the NCAA. I mean, if you can give a commissioner actual power, litigation power to change bylaws for the better, you may have something there.
Yeah, I guess that's the one thing that we sort of didn't discuss is essentially who would have to agree to allow this position to be put into place and what that would be taking away from them. Like you just mentioned, presidents, athletic directors, more importantly, boosters. That boosters might not have to agree, but in turn, there would be a portion of power taken away from them. Also, commissioners of conferences. I mean, yep. How much stroke are they going to be losing if there's going to be a new boss placed in front of them and someone who can come in and enact punishment, judgment, and make decisions for all of those universities and conferences? That would probably be the most difficult aspect of this position ever becoming a reality. We'll talk with Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com next. Cube Show Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Let's quickly go to the phones. Welcome in Johnny on a cell. Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning. I would be all for expanded playoffs. I would go to 8, not 6. I would not be down with a commissioner of college football. I would be happy to see the athletes get the support and the revenues and things that they deserve. And on that note, I think that Alabama needs to go ahead and fire Goff and fire him like yesterday. That's Alabama's baseball program is a joke. It's a dumpster fire. And the guys on the field that produce the most this year are losing their scholars because this guy is just a total prick. And I would love to see Goff fired like, you know, cut him off at the knees. Don't let him, you know, say, you know, don't give him access to the program, to anything. The dude is a cancer. He's a blight on society. He's a blight on our campus. And, you know, I'm surprised he doesn't have a show cause for, you know, for his previous position. They had to vacate all their wins. The dude needs to go. And I'm just, as a Bama sports fan, as a Bama alum, as you know, I just think the guy's got to go, and I'm hopeful Roll Bama Roll did a great open letter to A.D. Burns, and I hope the rest of Tide Nation jumps in, and let's put some pressure on A.D. to get this guy out of our system. And I appreciate the format to, you know, blow some steam here.
Thank you, Johnny. Thanks for the call. We'll roll. Go ahead, Mark.
I just want to say Greg Goff did take the University of Montevallo to the 2006 Division II College World Series.
There,
so if you want to have some hope, he has taken a team to the College World Series before. I mean, it was Division II, and it was my college, but still.
Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com. Mike joins us now. I don't know how much you got to hear that, but Alabama fans are not pleased with their baseball coach, Greg Goff. Do you feel like they are correct in asking for him to be canned?
I know he had a pretty bad season, and I know winning's pretty important in Alabama, so I don't know much. You know, admittedly, I don't know much about this guy personally. I don't know what he inherited. I don't know how long he's been. I haven't done a case study on Alabama baseball. I do remember when I covered Alabama in the 1990s, though, Cole, and it was pretty cool. I stepped onto a beat that was really down. I mean, they were awful. And a guy by the name of Jim Wells took over the program. And Alabama had some talented players. But I remember covering, and back then we covered every series. I mean, I don't know what it's like now, but when I was the Alabama beat guy working out of Mobile, I'd drive up to Tuscaloosa and spend 4 or 5 days a week up there in the courtyard by Marriott. I'm almost Platinum Premier, by the way, and just cover everything under the sun. I mean, if it wasn't Alabama baseball, it was Alabama series. But I remember Wells took this guy out of the game in the first inning because he didn't run to first base right. And we talked to him about it after the game, and he said, baseball's a game of routine and a game of excellence. And he said, we're going to do everything right. Even there's a right way to pop out. There's a right way to lose. There's a right way. And it all sounded so cliche, you know, kind of like Butch Jones with all his ideals. But you know what? By the time I left there, I had covered Alabama at the College World Series. And I think Jim Wells turned into one of the greatest coaches I've ever covered. And he did it simply by doing things the right way. So I don't know much about this coach, but what I remember of Alabama at the 90s, and was it Sewell Thomas Stadium? I guess that's had a faceless. Is that what it's called? Am I remembering that?
Yeah,
right?
It was then, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I look back fondly at covering. I remember going out to Stanford and watching Freddie Kitchens pitch for the baseball team in a regional. It was good times covering Alabama baseball. So I know people in Alabama love their college baseball. And it's hard for me to imagine Alabama not winning it much right now with all the money that they've got and their ability to, you know, recruit nationally. So, again, I don't know much about this coach, and I'm not one to always want to fire coaches because I don't think that's always the answer. Sometimes there's circumstances and things like that. So I can't comment on this, Cole, but I can tell you that I remember that Alabama baseball fans love the program, and I can't imagine baseball staying down too long there.
Let's go from baseball to softball. What a weekend for the Tennessee Volunteers. One out away from being shut out and no hit. And they come back and rally for 7 runs before ending that game. They'll advance. Pretty impressive performance.
Yeah, you know, they ran into a hot team. You know, they had a couple of senior pitchers that kind of threw a little bit different, you know, maybe didn't bring the heat, but threw a lot of movement, a lot of junk, and Tennessee was on the ropes. They were one pitch away. Girl had an 0-2 count in the top of the 7th inning and, you know, down 2-0, and you're right. There had been one hit when she came up. The girl before had gotten the first base hit of the game in the top of the 7th. Tennessee was the road team in that game. And blasted a 3-run home run that kept Tennessee in the winner's bracket. I kind of think they probably would have came back and won the regional anyway, just to be honest with you. But it was dramatics, and the coach called it the greatest comeback in Tennessee softball history. And as someone that's covered, you know, most of the Tennessee games since 2001, you know, I was gone there 4 years covering Michigan State, but I covered the Monica Abbott era at Tennessee, and really when Tennessee put their program on the map, I would have to agree it was probably the most dramatic comeback I've seen, and maybe helps this Tennessee team grow a little bit. You know, they've only got one senior on this softball team, and this wasn't supposed to be the year. They're supposed to be a year away, so a big win. It, really, for the whole SEC, call, I mean, we're seeing history. All 13 teams got in the tournament for the SEC. You know, Alabama had a great regional there, beat Minnesota. There was a lot of controversy over whether this 54-3 team should have been a top 16 seed, and the NCAA sent Minnesota down there to Tuscaloosa amid that hot, muggy weather, and Alabama was able to win, and now Alabama goes to Florida in what should be just a classic super regional best of three. And SEC softball is great, man. I mean, it's packaged in a two-hour window. I mean, those girls really play. They're really well coached. Auburn, another great program. Talking SEC softball, I mean, it's a fun sport to cover, too. And, you know, I coached my daughters in it, and one of them played a little college ball. So I enjoy watching it as well.
Are you surprised at the growth of SEC softball?
No, because the SEC committed to it. You know, they committed some facilities money to it, and that makes all the difference. I mean, you go out there to the Pac-12 didn't invest their money in their stadiums. You know, if you get a chance, pull up the picture, UCLA Stadium, and UCLA softball was the gold standard for a long time, much like UCLA basketball once was. And their facilities, it's awful. I mean, I've seen, you know, my teams, my travel ball teams played in better facilities than UCLA plays in. I mean, it's terrible. You know, and that really hurt the Pac-12, because those girls in California, much like those players and football players, they want to go somewhere where it matters. You know, that's how the SEC is able to get these West Coast players, because things just get lost out there. There's so much going on. But you come down to the SEC and play football, or you come down to the SEC and play softball, you're going to be put in the best facilities in a sport that matters with tremendous support. I mean, Alabama softball, they draw 4,000 or 5,000 a home game. I mean, it's a happening place. I mean, that's one hell of a venue. They did a great job with that, and they got great coaching. So, you know, the SEC's invested in facilities. They've invested in coaches, and players notice that.
I can remember visiting with Patrick Murphy, I think it was week three of the college football season, and talking about their facilities, which most people would say Alabama's is towards the top of. They have been towards the top in attendance, and that their facilities are one of the best in the league. And he's like, Cole, we're behind. Everybody else is. Mississippi State's got a new stadium. Auburn just built a new stadium. He's like, we're now having to catch up in the facilities war with college softball, because, like you said, Mike, everyone is going back and throwing that revenue into their stadiums and their facilities. So it's not difficult to do, I guess, when you put the resources behind it, but it has been cool to watch. We talk about it often here on the show, just how much we enjoy it and how much fun it is. I did want to ask you a question. We visited with Bill Connolly of SBNation.com. He's got an article about a commissioner in college football. You seem to understand sort of all sides of how college football operates, and I guess who really pulls the strings and sort of who really controls the majority of college football. Will we ever see a day that a commissioner is appointed to direct college football in any manner?
No, it depends on if you'll pay Nick Saban enough to do it when he retires from Alabama. I mean, he's the guy. I mean, he's the guy everybody listens to. He's the guy that commands enough authority and respect. And I don't know if Coach Saban would want to do that. I mean, he's getting older. I mean, he is an older coach. You know, he takes very good care of himself. And when you talk to him and you see him, I mean, he's certainly, what is he, 60? I'm trying to think. He's in his mid-60s, isn't he? Isn't that right?
65, yes.
67, something like that.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and I look back on it. I mean, Gene Stallings retired at 62. You know, so, I mean, Coach Saban's getting up there in the years, and I don't know how much longer, you know, he can do what he does his way on the sideline, you know. And I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not saying he's retired or anything like that. I'm just pointing it out. I mean, when you coach like Coach Saban does, I mean, that takes a lot out of you. And but to your point, I think that Nick Saban would be a guy. I don't know if he would want to do that. I don't know if he would want to deal with that. You know, when Gene Stallings got out of coaching, Gene was still very active. Gene was a big part of Texas A&M getting in the SEC. I don't think people realize how hard Gene Stallings worked behind the scenes to make that happen for A&M. And I don't think they realize just how much of a leader Gene was for Alabama behind the scenes. And, you know, but that's the way Gene Stallings operates. He's kind of a behind the scenes, you know, humble kind of guy. I don't know that Nick Saban operates like that. I think he's a little bit different. And I'm not so sure. I wouldn't mind seeing it. I would like to see more of a permanent committee of infractions, though, because this concept of having being judged by your peers, it turns into a political, you know, who's who. It turns into a power struggle of sorts. I mean, just take a look at what's happened with Syracuse and North Carolina basketball. Look at the things that went wrong in those programs. I mean, it's unbelievable. And these coaches are in the Hall of Fame and still coaching. They're untouchable. The NCAA can't touch them, refuses to touch them.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I don't understand it, Cole. I really don't. I saw Bruce Pearl get a 3-year show cause for having a kid stop by his house for 15 minutes that didn't even play at Tennessee. I mean, that was what got Bruce Pearl a 3, and then we're talking about players not going and having a systemic issue at programs where players don't go to classes and get, I mean, this is just, I mean, is the world round or flat in these people's minds? I just, that's what I want to see. I want to see a standardization of some rules and enforcement. That's the NCAA's biggest problem, if you ask me.
That's a good point, Mike. Great stuff. We always appreciate the time. Look forward to doing it again next week.
Thanks, Cole.
Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com. So there's a lot floating around if we were to attempt to find a college football commissioner, if he were put in place, what kind of control that he had, who would it be? That discussion could go on for a very long time. Speaking of college football coaches, we will rank the Big 12 coaches at 8:20 as they were recruits. Randolph High School head football coach Nick Flanagan's with us at 9 a.m. Beth Mowens going to call Monday Night Football this year. She's with us at 9:20. Back with more Cube Show after this.